Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. My guest today is Dean Irwin. He's the Senior Director of Cybersecurity at Maximus. Dean, good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
And with zero trust and a new year and new cybersecurity challenges, agencies are looking toward their security operations centers, their SOCs, maybe their network operations centers. And that's always a challenge to have those peopled properly, instrumented properly, and working properly. Give us your sense of a good approach to the SOC in 2024 and how Maximus thinks about that.
Well, as you know, cybersecurity is rapidly changing. And a big introduction is what's happening in AI. And I see that more as an offensive concern for AI, more than the defensive side. It's making actors be able to be very sophisticated, and specifically like phishing attempts and things like that. So for our SOC team, we are constantly training and certifications in specific technologies. One of the things we're proud of, I personally run three different SOCs, and in one of our SOCs, we have over three certifications per employee or per staff, which is pretty advanced. And the other thing that we're very happy with is our retention rate has been extremely good. We are well over 90% retention, so a typical industry is about 60% turnover or 60% attrition. And we're at 90, and a lot of that is because we keep our staff current. Mm-hmm. We invest in our staff quite a bit.
And when you are operating a SOC on behalf of an agency, is there anybody from the agency actually there?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, it all changed during COVID, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of it became remote, but we're seeing it gradually come back to the actual operation centers. I would say in most of our cases, it's 50-50. We are 50% on site and 50% remote. So in all the cases for our SOCs that we run, the federal government is the final approver. We create the content and we create the cases and the tickets and things like that. But they're the ones that finally authorize that. They typically, at least in my experience, have not been on the front line. Sitting at a terminal doing that kind of thing. But they do focus on collaboration. If we have to collaborate with another component, say in DHS or even DOD, they get involved. Typically, they don't want the contractor to reach out directly. They want the government to be the point. So I would say, you know, both for authorization, oversight, and interfacing to other components, other SOCs.
And are SOCs becoming more virtual, or are there still centers where it's a physical center, kind of like you think of as a NASA flight center?
Right. Yeah, I think it's kind of a combination of hybrid. You know, it's both. There's some advantages to having an integrated SOC to where everybody is together, but actually we have found the productivity is actually higher because you're not, remote when the SOCs are remote. Because they don't have any distractions. You know, in a SOC room, there's always activity, and we have found our production rates are pretty high when they're remote.
Interesting. So I want to get back to what you said at the top, which was artificial intelligence as something offensive coming in, that is artificially intelligently generated types of attacks are coming at agencies. And what's the sign of that, and how can SOC know that, and what kind of knowledge do your people have such that they can tell this is happening, and what is the effect of these types of attacks?
Well, a big one is identity theft. So a lot of services are now in the cloud, and the way that you used to protect it with moats and, you know, perimeter defense and things like that, but in a cloud environment, it's all about identity. And so you may have heard the term deep fakes, to where it's both video, voice prints, even fingerprints can be where they can impersonate an employee or a government official. I mean, there's been a lot of cases where there has been identity theft, both from the government side, as well as some of the contractors will get that. So my concern is about identity and also phishing. I forget the latest statistic. It's around 90%. I'm just going to rush out there. But about 90% of all cyber attacks start with phishing. And so you train employees or staff of a particular agency to not click on a link, to not, and they go through annual training, and that all happens. But now the AI is getting so sophisticated that it really does look real. There's no misspellings. It used to be, you know, misspellings of it or bad English. You could pick it up, or even how it's phrased. So what's happening on social media on the personal side too is, like, say a bank. They know what bank you bank at, so they'll create a customized phishing. It used to be, the princess, a prince in Africa has a great deal, you know, and that's where it's like broadcast phishing. But these are now targeted phishing, and the AI can now do it at scale. So there was a thing called phishing. There's kind of like three terms: generic phishing, and that's more where it's broad-based and generic. Then there's spear phishing, and spear phishing is where it's targeted for you, and they know your background, they know your bank, they know, you know, so they use some kind of connector to make it look real. And then there's what's called whaling, which is for executives. That's where they focus, because typically executives have the broadest access, and so if they can get a whale, what they call a whale, then they can peruse the network with higher credentials.
So if someone is doing a whaling type of attack, and I think people are wondering now when they see an email, is this really phishing or not? But it's successful, it's working. How does that attack or that attempted attack get known to the SOC? And what does the SOC see? And how does the SOC deal with that type of attempt, say a whaling attack or a phishing, you know, a spear phishing attack?
Well, there's some technologies that will detect it. But I will tell you, it's not perfect. People will report phishing. One of my favorite things I keep telling people is hover over the from line, because the actual from line would have the email address it comes from. So if you think it's coming from your bank and it doesn't have at bank.com, you know, at yourbank.com, then it's a fake phish. It's very hard for them to route, to pretend from that field due to what's called DKIMS, the way that the mail system works, to falsify the routing that it came from. So don't believe what's in your to line, because, like, for example, in Microsoft Office Outlook, it'll put down the name that the phisher wants you to see. But underneath that is the actual place it came from. And so you want to compare those two to see if it's real. That's the first thing I do. If I see, like, a really good banking email, is to look at the from line and hover over it and look to see where the actual email originated from.
So that originating email is a piece of data. And so I imagine the SOC then can detect if, say, a large number of inbound are coming from there, and an alert would go off somewhere.
Well, that works for regular phishing. But not for spear phishing, because spear phishing tends to be uniquely, and so you're not going to get a large number of those.
Interesting, yeah. So not enough to, like, trigger an alarm.
No, it's more based on content.
So therefore, there should be some kind of communication between the SOC and just normal people, or the tech staff that might be on staff, or the help desk, that type. You've got to almost close the loop here so everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, and these are rough approximations, but about a third of the alerts come from the users reporting themselves. Another third comes from technology, which detects the actual phish. But again, it's getting tougher and tougher to do that. And then another third is kind of what we call CTI, cyber threat intelligence, to where you get in the cycle of the attacker to see what targets they're going to hit. So you may have heard of the dark web, right?
Sure.
So a lot of the hacking groups will use the dark web to start talking about a campaign that they're going to go after a particular agency. And if we have access to that, then we know we can tune our filters more for that mm-hmm. particular attack. So CTI is a very important part of the SOC.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is the best function of the SOC in an age when the attack vector is to individuals in a way that may not be apparent to the SOC that's network that would traditionally be looking at the network perimeter to see what's going on?
Right, right. Well, a lot of it has to do with the users. I mean, a lot of the users have to inform. If it's a brand new attack that no one has ever seen, just like you've heard of zero days,
sure,
there's zero day exploits, but there's also zero day phishings to where they've never seen that one before. And so the best defense is your customers,
your users. So that makes the SOC as much a technical apparatus, if you will, as almost an intelligence gathering, an ear into the, or thumb into the wind, or ear to the doors type of operation.
Absolutely.
These days.
Absolutely, and there are some technical techniques. Like for example, there's what they call beaconing, or other techniques to where maybe an exploit did get inside your network. And the SOC didn't detect it. Some are very stealthy. But then you monitor that it's outbound communication to a command and control server.
Mm-hmm.
Those are usually able to be picked up. So unless they're really hiding through some VPNs or other techniques where they hide the ultimate command and control server, we can usually pick up once it's beaconing out.
Interesting. Who knew? All right. Well, you knew. We're glad you did. We're going to take a short break now. My guest is Dean Irwin. He's the Senior Director of Cybersecurity at Maximus. I'm Federal Drive host Tom Temin. This is Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus, here on Federal News Network.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus here on Federal News Network. My guest today is Dean Irwin. He's the Senior Director of Cybersecurity at Maximus. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. And in operating SOCs on behalf of the government, I mean, each mm-hmm. year is different. Each era in cybersecurity is different. And as you said, it's not necessarily hundreds of people staring at screens anymore. It's much more dynamic, much more intelligence-based. What are the top challenges in SOC operation, do you feel, as we head to 2024, age of AI, age of cloud, age of micro-segmentation, and all those goodies?
Sure, sure. Well, cloud services actually makes it somewhat challenging for a SOC because if you have software as a service, the SOC really doesn't get involved. If it's a commercial service that is being provided to the government, the SOC really doesn't have insight into the internals of that, and so all we can do is watch the outside. But I would say one of the biggest challenges is collaboration with the system owners and the system developers of applications. Like in one of our agency's cases, we have over 60,000 endpoints and mm-hmm. over 5,000 servers, and so there are on the order of tens of mission essential systems that have to stay up 24/7. And so what will happen is we might detect something on one of those mission essential systems, and then we contact the system owner, and because the SOC doesn't run the servers, the system mm-hmm. owners do, and they either don't understand cyber because they're not cyber people. So if we say, hey, one of your servers is beaconing out, they're like, no, it's not. So we have to...
Looks dark to me.
Looks dark. Right. So we call the term trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to believe what the system owner says, but then you want to follow it up with what actually is happening. Mm-hmm. So there's been several cases where we've contacted a system owner and they said that's normal traffic. And we're like, no, it's not. And we have to actually kind of prove to the system owner that this is actually a compromise and not normal traffic. So a lot of it is the SOX education of the system owners, because they are practitioners in the cyber area. So we have to educate them on what happens there.
And as systems age, and nowadays 2 years old, you know, is already aged, but the original developers and the people that know it intimately having developed it may not be around. So I imagine sometimes one of the challenges is understanding what's going on in the logic and where you would need to find, you know, the source of that beaconing or whatever the breach might be.
Right, and that's true. And not only just the applications, but some of the platforms. Like, not that some of ours have it, but if you were trying, during Y2K, the big issue was COBOL developers, right?
Yep.
Trying to find COBOL.
I remember.
So if there's a system that's running COBOL that's still running, it's really hard to find somebody that could help understand what the code is doing and if there's issues. We're working on a code walkthrough right now with one of our system owners to understand why this particular event is happening. We don't think it's a breach, but we think it's in the code. But we don't think that's a good way to code in that particular case.
So you almost have to be a digital archaeologist in some cases as
well.
Yes,
yes. That's a great term. I like that.
Yeah, yes. So yeah, that old code. And the government does, in fact, have millions and millions of lines of that type of stuff still running.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and which gets me to the question about tools. Because agencies very often, if they've been running their own SOC or they've had some type of cybersecurity operation, they've invested in all these tools, and you've heard that said over and over again, we want to use our tools, we have too many tools, we want to narrow down the tools and all this kind of thing. If they bring in a Maximus, say, to operate it for them, what is your tool strategy?
Sure. There's kind of like three components to a SOC. One is the SIEM, which is the security event information management system. And we have endpoint tools. And then we have what sandbox or other types of analysis tools. So in our case, most of our clients are on Splunk. I mean, there's other SIEM tools out there. But that's our primary one. On the endpoint, there's several. There's Tanium, there's McAfee, there's Trellix, there's Microsoft Defender. So it really depends on the configuration of the environment. For example, some of the system owners use Linux systems, some use Windows systems. You know, some even use Sun Solaris, which is
still,
yeah. Believe it or not. That's one of those legacy ones we're talking about. So there's actually, if I could go off topic just for a second, there's two types of modernization. One is what they call lift and shift. And that is like you take what's existing with all of its bad attributes, you know, old code, all that stuff, and you move it to the cloud. So you're not improving any of the security, you're just changing where it runs, where it executes from, right? Or you can do a rewrite, a modernization to where you move it to a modern language, like say from COBOL to something else. And there's a big push now for secure design, software design, secure software design. And there's what they call memory safe languages that are, if they're written in that language, it's a lot harder to have a vulnerability. You know, some developers, like the old C++ is not as secure as some other modern languages. So
you can C++ got us to where we are today in some ways.
Right, it got us to where, but it has memory leaks and things like that. So anyways, lift and shift. So. And then the third is the analysis, like VirusTotal. Say if they pick up a malware package, they'd be in the SOC, pick up a malware package. They want to be able to run it through different analysis tools. In some cases, they can use commercial services like VirusTotal, or they can explode it into a sandbox to see what it does. So they can essentially poke at it and see what is it trying to do. Because probably, as you know, the state actors will sit on a network for months before they do anything. So the first thing is they're trying to maintain very low profile. And so you want to see, you want to turn the time clock over on those to see what they're going to do in a couple months from now. That type of
sort
thing.
Sort of fast forward the thing so you're ahead of it.
See what happens, And you can also, one of the things that's happening now is more and more data is being encrypted, which means all you can do from a SOC point of view is look at the metadata. You can't actually get inside the packets. So you have to look at who's it talking to, how often is it talking to, what type of protocol is it using. And so use those, the metadata to know, is this a threat or is it normal traffic?
And that, again, backs up to the people have to be skilled in these tools. For example, code analysis. By the way, do SBOMs ever help in the SOC context?
But that's more of, that's more of a compliance thing. It's saying, okay, if you're using this open source library and it had this vulnerability, to know that it's true. That happens a lot in the IoT world, Internet of Things world. So there's two types of technology, and this affects government agencies. There's IT, which is your typical desk, right? OT is operational technology. Those would be like the scanners at the airports and things like that. A lot of those tools, the IoT, have embedded code that you don't really know what's there. What libraries did it use? A lot of open source software is included in those IoT devices. And so just knowing the vulnerabilities. And there's the whole world of compliance is, in fact, CISA does a really good job of this, of sending out what they call KEVs, known exploitable vulnerabilities. And it says, if you're using this particular version of this library, of this open source, it's now been compromised.
Sure.
And so having that SBOM helps you know where you should focus.
Okay, just in the final minute we have, then it sounds like those certified three certifications per person that you have working the SOCs, they have to be pretty versatile people, don't they?
Yes.
I mean, and, open-minded almost.
And one of the things I'm a big certification fan. In fact, we at Maximus give them a little bump, a reward every time they get a certification because we believe that that helps show that you understand it. So one of the things I'm trying to push for our SOC, at least our tier, we have tier 1, 2, and 3 SOC, and especially the tier 2 and 3, we want them to get some of the offensive certifications, not just the defensive. Like the table stakes one is Security Plus. Everybody at the SOC should have security. That's like basic, right? But one of the most advanced over offensive certifications is called OSCP, and we are trying to get our higher level tiers to be certified in offense because the better offense makes the better defense because you know how these exploits happen.
All right. Good place to end. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. It was a pleasure.
Dean Irwin is the Senior Director of Cybersecurity at Maximus. I'm Federal Drive host Tom Temin. You're listening to Federal News Network. For more on this discussion, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Maximus.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.